It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from Federal Employee Defense Services, or FEDS. And today is January 23rd, 2015, which also happens to be my daughter's birthday. And since she's the only one in my family who will listen to the show, I want to wish her a happy birthday. So happy birthday, Mia. Now, with that serious bit of business over with, let's get to the show, which is actually a serious one we're doing today. In the aftermath of the recent brutal execution-style murders of the two New York City police officers, Detectives Liu and Ramos. Law enforcement fatalities and safety have been the subject of much discussion of late. And now with the release of the preliminary data from the good folks at the National Law Enforcement Officer Memorial Fund regarding law enforcement fatalities for 2014, we've learned that 2014 has saw an increase, a 24% increase in line of duty fatalities, with 54% of an increase in firearm-related incidents. So to assist us with our discussion about these results and the implications of the data, we are delighted to have Steve Groinger from the Memorial Fund in studio with me. Steve is the Director of Communications and Marketing at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Steve, good morning, and thanks for taking some time to be with us.
Good morning, Tony. Thanks for having me with you.
Absolutely. And for our other guest today, we have Nate Contura, the Executive Vice President of FLEOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. And if you are a Fed Talk regular, you know that FLEOA is a frequent contributor and a guest for us, Fed Talk, and certainly an organization that we like to bring on whenever we are discussing law enforcement-related issues. So, Nate, we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule and being here with us today.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to
To point out that Nate one-upped me on my little birthday wish to my daughter, because he actually brought his daughter in studio today, who's in here, to watch her dad. Want to remind or let our listeners know that Fed Talk is brought to you by Long-Term Care Partners, LLC. They're actually our new Fed Talk sponsor for 2015, so we're delighted to have them on board. Long-Term Care Partners administers the OPM's sponsored federal long-term care insurance program. For more information about them, please go to www.ltcfeds.com. That's ltcfeds.com. So, Steve, I know we're going to talk about these statistics, but for our listeners who are not familiar about the Memorial Fund, please introduce them to where it's located there on Judiciary Square and the services that it offers.
Sure. Like you said, the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial is on the 400 block of E Street Northwest in the Judiciary Square neighborhood here in Washington, D.C., and it bears the names of 20,267 law enforcement officers who have been killed in the line of duty.
And I know you have some other initiatives that the Memorial Fund is involved with, such as the law enforcement museum. Tell us a little bit about that.
Correct. Yeah. In addition to managing and operating the memorial, we are busy working to build the National Law Enforcement Museum, which will tell the story of American law enforcement through exhibits and collections and programs, and really is designed to help bring a stronger bond between the community and the law enforcement officers who serve in those communities.
And I know that there's an annual ceremony. Mm-hmm. It's done, I believe, it's in May, right?
Coincides May 13th.
With Police Week and
correct.
All that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, every year, the second week of May, or the week in which May 15th falls, is designated as National Police Week. And one of the signature events during National Police Week is the annual Candlelight Vigil. Every year, as I mentioned before, we engrave the names of fallen law enforcement officers. And that ceremony is where those names are officially dedicated on the memorial, held at 8 p.m. on May 13th every year.
And is the engraving, it's done throughout the year, or is it just done at this one location?
It's done at one time. So the majority of our engraving happens in April, just before Police Week.
But it's open throughout the year. It's open to the public. And
correct.
People
yeah, the memorial there. is an open national park property. It's accessible for visitation 24/7, 365 days a year.
Right. For those of you familiar with the D.C. area, it's over there by the National
Building Museum.
Thank you.
Correct.
Lost my train of thought there. Just Cherry Square. But let's jump into the statistics. You know, because I remember doing this show last year with your chairman and CEO, Craig Floyd, you know, and we were celebrating, you know, 2013, you know, we saw a decrease in officer fatalities, but we're sitting here, you know, looking back at 2014, and we got a 24% increase.
Correct. Yeah, we were all really hoping that last year was the first year in what would be a downward trend. The nation lost 102 law enforcement officers in the line of duty last year. And as you note, that number, based on preliminary data, increased 24%. And we reported 126 law enforcement officer fatalities for 2014.
So 2013 was the first year we actually saw a decrease, and
it was actually the second year we saw a decrease. We saw a real spike in numbers in 2011 with 171 officers killed. We saw that number come down a little bit by about 20 officers in 2012, and then down, you know, significantly to 102 in 2013. But then we now have this spike back in the opposite direction.
And I guess tell us a little bit more about, I guess, what the data is showing. I know, you know, we commented before we went on air. I'm always amazed when I do this show to learn that it was, you know, the highest incidents involved traffic related accidents and fatalities. But this year, that's not the case, huh?
Right. 14 of the last 16 years, traffic related incidents have been the number one cause of law enforcement officer deaths. And this year, firearms-related fatalities were the leading cause of officer fatality for 2014. We had 50 officers who were shot and killed in the line of duty. And as we noted before, that's about 54% higher than 2013.
And does the data suggest any reason for that? And Nate, you can jump in if you know you have anything to add here. You know, but is it just, you know, it was bad roll of the dice in 14, or what are we seeing?
Well, we saw a significant jump in number of officers ambushed in 2014. We had 5 officers ambushed in 2013 and 15 in 2014. So that, of course, is a big red flag, and I'm sure Nate can speak to that for sure. So, yeah, you know, there really is a concern here in what we're seeing, not only in the numbers, but then when we look within each of our categories, you know, like you mentioned, the assassination of Officers Liu and Ramos were a real pinnacle, and I think really got a lot of folks' attention. But there's a lot of work to be done here to make the job safer for the officers who are keeping us safe.
Well, you're really wondering if we're seeing a shift towards an anti-law enforcement, you know, sentiment, and what can organizations like the Memorial Fund, like FLIOA, what can we do, you know, to sort of, you know, change that, to change the image, to work with, you know, our leaders, our political leaders, our community leaders, you know, to have that turned around. Because,
well, and Tony, we're seeing, you know, an upturn in threats to law enforcement. I mean, it's almost rampant at this point, where across the United States we're seeing time and again where law enforcement are seeing threats posted on Facebook and Twitter, and now they have to go out and find these people, and they're finding them, and they're making a rest, but this is unprecedented. We've never seen this to this velocity, and it's a scary trend, and unfortunately, I think it's going to continue.
You know, and I don't think it's, some people want to claim it's a backlash, you know, what happened in Missouri, you know, but I think it was something that we've been seeing starting to trend all you know, all year long, and it's pretty scary. We're going to have to stop here to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Steve Groinger from the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund and Nate Contura from FLIOA. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm talking with Steve Groinger from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and Nate Contura from FLIOA. And we were talking about the year-end law enforcement officer fatality report that is compiled by the Memorial Fund. And Steve, I know we were talking about some of the more recent incidents I mentioned at the start of the show about the brutal killings up in New York. But why don't you give us some, just a little more information, background about some other officers, you know, who paid the ultimate price this year.
Sure. So we're hearkening back to, you know, the notion of officers being ambushed, which they have been. 15 officers were ambushed and killed in 2014. And a lot of folks, their consciousness and awareness was raised with the New York shootings, but we've seen officers being ambushed throughout 2014. I think back to June when the two officers were having lunch at a pizza shop and were assassinated there. I think about July when Officer Melvin Santiago was ambushed at a Walmart in New Jersey. Then we had the two New York officers. A day or so later, there was an officer ambushed in Tarpon Springs, Florida. So there definitely is a criminal element out there that seeks to harm or kill police officers.
You know, we're talking about the ambushing, the firearm, fatalities. Educate us a little bit about, I talked about the, each previous year, it's been the traffic related, fatalities. What kinds of incidents are those? And, what kind of things can, the community do, to help prevent those tragedies from occurring?
Well, I'm sure Nate can certainly speak to the things a community can do. One of the things that we believe is simply raising folks' awareness to what's going on is one of the first steps to helping bring some safety and some sanity into the communities that are experiencing a lot of this turmoil. We want folks to know what our officers face as they go about doing their work every day. And well, unfortunately, we want them to understand the price that's being paid by many police officers and agents in the country today.
Yes. And, to add to that, Steve, for the people out there, I mean, I kind of think that the United States was founded on the rule of law. And it's kind of one of our founding principles as a democratic nation. And we may not always agree with the police, and we're certainly not perfect by any stretch, and there are, we do have our faults, there's no doubt, but we need to stop this senseless assassinations, and people need to call up and say there is a problem here, you need to check up on this. And there are, there's example after example where citizens have called and they have prevented a serious incident from occurring because of that. We just need more of that.
Right. How ill-advised it is, vigilante justice, none of that stuff is ever, you know, is ever advised. So certainly, I think it's a, it's a cultural, I think we need to start, having frank, serious, open conversations, difficult conversations. What is it, with particular groups, what is the opposition that they have, to those in law enforcement? Why do they feel, why do they feel that rage? How can we, from the law enforcement community perspective, what can we do to sort of understand where that rage is coming from, where we can help get the dialogue started, to talk about it, where we don't have this, these senseless killings.
Yeah, we are in this together, right? And we have to have a collaborative effort between our citizens and the law enforcement. And I think if we have these frank talks and discuss these issues at the local level, that's where it really starts from.
So, well, go ahead.
I would agree with that. And actually, back in the beginning of December of last year, the National Law Enforcement Museum hosted a panel discussion on this very topic. It was called When Police Shoot, the Use of Force. I encourage folks who are interested to go to the museum website. It was recorded and aired on C-SPAN, and you can play on demand. But it dealt with this specific issue of bringing law enforcement and the communities they serve together to raise awareness on everyone's side, give the public a better sense of law enforcement activities and the decision-making that they make, as well as give the public perception of law enforcement.
Well, certainly, it goes without saying we want to be able to reduce, the intentional violence, towards law enforcement officer. But I think it's equally important to raise awareness, to the accidents that happened. We talked about the traffic accidents. There were 35 were killed in auto crashes. 9 were struck outside their vehicle. 5 were killed in motorcycles. There's little things we as civilians can do, and you see a police officer in pursuit, of something, we don't get up behind them because we're going to get through the light or something like that, or if they've pulled somebody over, let's get over into the next lane. There are a lot of defensive things that we can do, as citizens, as drivers out there that can help.
One of the things that we promote heavily in partnership with the folks over at the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is promotion of the move over law. There is a move over law on the books in all 50 states now and has been for a couple of years. And that law does require, if you see an emergency responder, lights on, providing aid or assistance to a motorist, it's the law for you to move over one clear lane and give that officer the space that he needs or she needs to do their work.
Yeah, that's very important. I see that time again, and it works. It works well. It's good law.
So, Steve, tell us, what does the Memorial Fund, what does it do each year with the data? Does it work with Congress? Does it work with the other stakeholders, the law enforcement, community, and sharing that and, talking about new initiatives and things that, what we can do to make changes?
Sure. The Memorial Fund really assimilates and serves as a clearinghouse for this data that we can provide to organizations like FLEOA and many others who then take that, are armed with that information and data, and can go about making change on Capitol Hill or within the legislature there.
Like, I know in 2011, for example, when officers' fatalities spiked, to 171, it led to a number of new initiatives. Are you able to speak to any of those?
Yeah, I think Nate will be able to speak to them as well. But I know that a number of agencies started requiring mandatory wear of bullet-resistant vests and seatbelts. Which is a really good thing. Use of less lethal weaponry like stun guns and tools like that. They put some restrictions on pursuit policies, increasing things like spike sticks to stop felons and whatnot. And they took a look at the manpower of what's being assigned to a call or assigned to a task force or whatnot. And we feel that these are some good solutions and some good initiatives that help keep officers safe as they go about doing their work.
Right. And, well, you know, with the use of technology that's coming online, those pursuit policies are definitely a good thing, especially when you don't know who's there. And we've seen these horrific, you know, car crashes because of this. And but time and again, you see law enforcement are responding and they get into a car wreck and needlessly so. I'm afraid most of the time.
Yeah. Well, in part, I mean, some of it involves training law enforcement.
Correct.
You know, we don't need to, you know, fly into every situation, you know, at 90 plus,
yep.
You know, into it where we could, you know, endanger others. You know, so it is, you know, I think about education on both sides of the street, if you will. Steve, I wonder if you can address, is there any geographical breakdown in the statistics, you know, across the country?
Sure. Yep. In our report, we detailed the top five states who lost law enforcement officers in 2014. California led the nation, losing 14 officers, followed by Texas, which lost 11 officers. New York lost 9 officers. Florida lost 6 officers. And Georgia lost 5 officers, unfortunately, in 2014.
So, I mean, there's really, I guess, nothing, I mean, unique there. I mean, it's sort of tracked with what the population was in those states. What about in federal law enforcement?
Over in federal law enforcement, we had six officer fatalities in 2014.
And how does that compare to previous years?
I believe last year we lost 9 federal law enforcement officers, so it's down a little bit from the prior year.
So each year I have you guys on. I always like to give you an opportunity to tell the story of Customs Inspector John Stout.
Gotcha. Yeah, Customs Inspector Stout. Let me find my notes here.
Silence and radio is great.
Okay. So Customs Inspector Stout was killed when he was 33 years old. He was a very committed officer. He was worked with a notorious pirate, John Lafitte, in Louisiana. The initial charge was smuggling, but was soon upgraded to murder once they found Inspector Stout. That had been killed by John Lafitte. We added Inspector Stout's name to the memorial in 2013, his name is one of 90 members of the U.S. Customs Service that's on the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. And Inspector Stout is unique because his death was some 200 years ago on January 20th, 1814. And now he is permanently remembered and a part of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial.
So, I mean, is this something so I find it interesting because you've got the information so many years later. But is that something that's frequent, that where you get information several years after the fact?
It is. We have a research team that work at the Memorial Fund and spend a lot of time working with internet files, historical files, volunteers who will go work in the local areas to find the information and identify officers who were killed 50, 100, or even 200 years ago to be sure that, you know, they are being honored just like the folks that are being killed in the last 10 years.
So there are some proactive efforts on behalf of the Memorial Fund.
Absolutely.
That they go out there rather than just waiting for the information to be reported.
Absolutely. Yep. And on the average, we add about 100 to 150 historical fatalities to the memorial every year, in addition to the officers who were killed the prior year.
Okay. We're going to have to stop here for our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our discussion about the 2014 year-end officer fatality data that is compiled by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. And then we'll get the latest from Pliowa. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and we're speaking with Steve Groinger from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Front and Nate Contera from FLIOA. We are discussing the 2014 year-end officer fatality data that is compiled by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. So, Steve, before I shift gears here and give Nate the floor to talk about the what's going on in the world of federal law enforcement, you know, give us some final tidbits here on the report, the data, the memorial fund.
Sure thing. One of the categories of fatalities we haven't yet spoken about is officers who were killed in incidents or died in from illnesses other than firearms or traffic related. Last year, we lost 27 officers. Primarily from job-related illnesses. Majority of them were heart attacks. We had an officer fall, an officer drowned, and an officer killed in a fire-related incident. And I know I've tossed around a lot of numbers and statistics and want to encourage all the listeners to go check out this content for themselves. It's all available on the FedAgent.com website. And I thank you for having me in today.
And the website for the Memorial Fund, you know, let's give that out. Tell them a little bit about how, you know, folks can donate. It's, you know,
absolutely.
It doesn't, you know,
yep.
Operate on its own.
No, it sure doesn't. Folks can learn more about the memorial, make a donation, or get involved and go to www.lawmemorial.org. We have plenty of events and activities going on. We're always looking for volunteers and people to pitch in and help, and would love to have all your listeners with us this coming May for Police Week. And if you can't be with us, to hopefully do something from your area to honor these heroes.
And if you haven't been over there yet and you're listening, it truly is a moving experience, you know, whether, you know, you're in the law enforcement community or not. The Law Enforcement Museum, you know, that the Memorial Fund is in the process of developing, is a wonderful, you know, support for these things we talked about educating the community, you know, about everything, you know, that's going on, you know, in law enforcement, helps bring down some of those barriers, you know. So I've known these guys for a long time. They do a lot of great work. So if you can support them, you know, please do that. So Nate, let's before we get into FLIOA's initiatives, its agenda for 2015.
Hefty.
take a moment here and just introduce the organization.
Yeah, no, thank you
to our listeners.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. So, you know, FLIOA is the largest nonpartisan law enforcement organization that exclusively represents federal law enforcement agents and officers. It was created back in the late 1970s out of a need to have legal services for its members, as agents are not allowed to unionize for the most part. So it's gotten larger. We're, you know, started small back then, and now we're about 27,000 strong now. We're involved in, you know, all facets of our legal services. We also have a strong presence on Capitol Hill doing legislative type work, And we also have chapters across the United States and do quite a bit of a charitable work through its foundation.
Right. And I would say, you know, in addition to, you know, FLEO is also another organization, you know, that's near and dear to my heart that I've been, you know, associated with even back to my days when I was a baby lawyer in the federal government at ATF. But in addition to its primary tenet of providing exceptional legal services to its members, its advocacy, you know, efforts are second to none, you know, with any of the federal employee, you know, associations that are out there. They really, you know, really get things done, you know, and it's because of the collective voice of the organization. So if you're listening out there, you're in federal law enforcement, you're eligible for FLEOA, you know, don't just sit back and reap the benefits. You need to be joining the organization because there really is strength in numbers. And they can go to the website, get information. It's FLEOA.org, FLEOA.org. Really easy, you know, to get signed up and get enrolled there online.
And what's really nice about, you know, FLEO, and that sets us apart from, say, like the unions that are out there, and they're fine, but what sets us apart is we're not a union, we're a fraternal organization, and we're nonpartisan. So it doesn't matter, you know, what the item is that we're advocating, we're going to address it in a nonpartisan way, even if it's dealing with agency matters or stuff on Capitol Hill.
Right. And, you know, that's, you know, we're not here to badmouth the unions, but, you know, but, you know, it's nonpartisan, but it's pro, you know, it's pro law enforcement.
It's pro federal
law enforcement. These are the interests. These are the issues that affect, you know, federal law enforcement across the board, whether you're at TSA, ATF, DEA, ICE, you know, what.
Right. And I should have said that, you know, we do represent agents from all 65 federal law enforcement agencies. So, we do represent anybody, you know, from the main FBI, ATF, all the U.S. Marshals, all the huge law enforcement, down to the small ones, even the really small IGs.
Correct. So let's, you know, we started the show off talking about, unfortunately, you know, the fatalities that have been, you know, impacting law enforcement in general. Tell us a little bit about the initiative that FLEOA supports called the National Blue Alert.
Yeah, the National Blue Alert. Well, it was originally proposed back in 2012, 2013, during the 113th session of Congress. It actually passed out of the House of Representatives back on actually May 14th, 2013, the day before National Law Enforcement Day. And but it fell short over in the Senate side. So a little bit about it, though, is that it's kind of styled after the Amber Alert, where it's a program for law enforcement officers when there is an agent that's been, you know, shot, or an officer that's been shot or killed, or it's a serious issue and a problem, and the offender is still at large. So, and much like how the Amber Alert goes across all the smartphones, the radio, the TVs, it's activated. And when there's a known suspect, so for instance, just an example, you know, a person, you know, shoots a law enforcement officer, we know who the person is, but they're on the run. And so the Amber or the Blue Alert gets activated, has a picture of the person, whatever car he's in, a description, and it gets broadcast to everybody because, you know, we can't be everywhere. And so, as you know, like how we were talking about earlier, when there's a collaborative effort between, you know, our citizens and law enforcement, this is a perfect example where they see the car, they see the person, just like an Amber Alert, it alerts them. So it should be sent. It should have passed back in 2013, but because of a certain senator named Colburn, who thank God is no longer with us, you know, wouldn't pass it out.
But they're nonpartisan.
You know, it's a nonpartisan thing, right? No, this Blue Alert is nonpartisan, yeah, I mean, so there isn't any reason why it shouldn't have passed out.
What are the barriers to any legislation, you know, or, you know, I mean, there aren't really stakeholders on the other side of it that are, you know, opposing it. It's one of these, you know, no-brainers. You know, and it's not a, I would presume it's a fiscal neutral, you know,
it's
proposal.
Well, the
it costs a little bit of money.
It costs $1 billion.
Okay.
Come on, seriously? That is a pittance for something like this.
You know, and it's certainly, you know, to use, you know, the example you gave with on the Amber Alert side of it, it certainly, you know, has worked there. And I think I was reading in there that it's also designed to enable to use social media that's out there.
Correct.
To be able to tie all that in.
Absolutely.
You know, which we all know is instrumental in the Boston Marathon, you know, bombings, is, you know, able to circle the wagons and get, you know, law enforcement to respond collectively the way it did and swiftly and as quickly as it did.
There are examples after examples. So we're going to, FLEO is going to push this into this new Congress. And one of the, we want to add to it, actually, which is kind of born out of the assassinations of detectives Lou and Ramos in New York. You know, we should add to it where when we know that a subject, you know, posted a threat online, which is exactly what he did, contemporaneous with a violent act that he committed, you know, that should be an alert all where he's sending them message out on Facebook or Twitter that he's going to kill law enforcement. That should activate the blue alert at that point. That wasn't in the first version. But this is how much we've evolved over time. This wasn't even a problem 2 years ago.
Right.
Now it's a serious issue.
Does it? I mean, does it come with it? It must, but come with the kind of a central place where the information is coming back into.
Correct.
If I see somebody, I'm not just not calling my local police department or
911.
I need to get, you know, where they can do something with the information quickly.
Right, right. So, you know, it's the oversight is with the Attorney General. He appoints a blue alert coordinator in every state, and they have different officials down at the county and city area. So if the blue alert is then activated, it's going to tell you exactly what phone number to call and who you should be talking to. And so it gets that information to the officers, you know, as quickly as possible.
So just to be clear, has it been reintroduced yet?
Not yet, but we're working on it.
Okay.
Right.
So once it is, you know, if you're out there, you're listening, you're in support, you know, please write your representatives, make sure they know that you support the National Blue Alert.
We'll certainly tell you when it is being introduced.
Let's shift to another piece of legislation that I know is new and important for FLEO, the Law Enforcement Protection Act.
Yes, this
Tell
is
us about that.
Sure. Thanks, Tony. So this is a piece that is about to be introduced, you know, very, very shortly. We got our sponsors on board. We're all set. And the Law Enforcement Protection Act was kind of born out of the furlough and sequestration back in 2013, again, where law enforcement officers were furloughed because of a government shutdown. What occurred here in this place is there was federal law enforcement agencies that actually prohibited its agents from carrying their issued firearm, and they told them that not only can you carry your issued firearm, but you cannot carry your personally owned firearm with your government credentials. Thus, you know, rendering them really defenseless. You know, just because there's a government shutdown doesn't take away the threat that an officer feels. You know, they have to have personal security. I mean, we're out there arresting, you know, some very bad people. I mean, if they're making it up to the federal arena, this isn't their first time. You know, so these are for typically, you know, very bad people. And, you know, the officers should have the right to defend themselves. So really what this bill does is takes the ambiguity out of the information that was provided to the agencies, because the agencies had to interpret how they were going to shut down their operations. So because of that, some of these agencies that we got to lock everything up, and we're just not going to allow you to defend yourselves. Now, FLIOA and these agencies try to, you know, tell them, no, this is the wrong way. We actually ask them, hey, have the agent sign a form that releases their liability. They didn't want to do any of that. So it was a big problem, and what really drove this thing home was there was an agent from one of those three agencies that actually had an encounter with, you know, a very large man, and he, you know, they exchanged a few words. Now she was able to diffuse it, everything calm down, and she wasn't more concerned about if this guy was going to, you know, do some come physical harm. But she was incensed to the fact that her agency took away her firearm, her credentials, her way of defending herself. And that's, nobody should have to go through that.
Well, I mean, the budget crisis last year, sequestration before that, you know, had everybody, you know, the executive branch, you know, acting and operating in a frenzy. I mean, the other part of that, when you were telling me about this, just came to mind. It not only were they abusing their discretion, they were violating other federal laws, such as LEOSA, the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, which specifically allows, you know, active and retired federal, state, and local law enforcement officers to carry concealed weapons, notwithstanding.
And we brought that to their attention, and
you know, but it looks like they were over concerned with the, I don't know, with the budgetary issues, or concerned about what people, you know, were going to do out there, but. So, you know, I see this as an amendment. You can push it, if you haven't considered this, as an amendment to the LEOSA. We're going to have to stop here to hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up today's discussion with Steve and Nate. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are entering our last segment of the show. And before we took a break, speaking with Nate Contura, a very spirited Nate Contura, about FLIOA's 2015 legislative initiatives. And the two we were talking about were some of the two new ones, the National Blue Alert and then the Law Enforcement Protection Act. But Nate, let's talk about some of the ones that we've entered, you know, in previous years that we're still fighting to get past.
So we're going to be working on one of our main one is going to be the TSP withdrawal. Currently, our brothers and sisters on our state and local side are able to withdraw from their defined benefit at age 50, whereas federal law enforcement officers, we have to wait till it's 59 and a half before we can withdraw from our TSP. So really, this act just kind of gives a parity between our state people and our all the federal people. So it really won't cost anything. It's just really a parity, especially since federal law enforcement officers have special retirement. We do have to retire early. We can't work past 57. So, if we can't access our one-third of our retirement, which is the TSP, until 59 and a half, it kind of puts a little bit of a burden on our officers.
It means retirement for federal law enforcement officers is a part-time job.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Just to elaborate a little bit on this, the average federal worker, works till they meet their minimum retirement age. They reach those limits. They're employed. They're able, when they go and retire, they're able to take, that's the whole idea. I could take my immediate annuity, and that's what's going to help me, retire. in for federal law enforcement officers, they've got a specialized retirement that allows them to retire earlier. And the reason for that is because, you know, they're out there running around, you know, leaping buildings and cars and running through airports.
It's a young man and woman's profession. It's not meant for old people in their 50s.
What the reg says, it's a primary rigorous law enforcement position, so it's hard on them. But, I mean, the point is that Congress has already said, this is your retirement. You know, this is your retirement eligibility. This is when you minimally meet your requirements, and you're mandatory 7 years later. You ought to be able to tap into your annuity, you know, right away. I mean, to me, this is just another one of those obvious fixes, you know, that should apply across the board. Is, look, when you meet your eligibility, you ought to be able to take it without.
Right. I mean, if you're eligible to retire, if you're eligible to retire at age 50, which a good majority of federal agents are, or maybe a year or two beyond that, you should be able to access your TSP without taking a 10% penalty. So you're exactly right, Tony. It's just a common sense approach.
So let's go back to 9/11.
Sure.
And talk about the reauthorization of the Zadroga 9/11 Act, and, you know, why that was initially important, you know, and why it's important still.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's,
this
it,
many years
yeah,
later.
No, I appreciate that. It's really important because, you know, as everyone is aware, I mean, we've a number of, you know, firefighters, law enforcement, anybody that was at ground zero during that time when those buildings collapsed has created significant health problems for them. A number of law enforcement officials have died for causes that were perfectly fine up until that point. Now they're dying of these mysterious illnesses or cancer. So this just provides a screening to keep screening available for the first responders that were there, and to, you know, get a jump on if they're encountering a serious problem, they should be able to have free screening in order to address whatever problem that's occurring. You know, unfortunately, the way that the bill was drawn up, it needs a reauthorization. So we're going to push once again to have this bill reauthorized in order to keep, you know, it's the right thing to do. Basically, this bill is the right thing to do, and that's what we're going to ask Congress to do.
And, I mean, some of the what people don't realize is a lot of these illnesses manifested themselves several years later, yes, you know, and are still just manifesting themselves.
And they still are,
you know, right, similar to, you know, what we saw in the Vietnam War. There were veterans, you know, that weren't, you know, diseases weren't developing themselves to, you know, sometimes, you know, 12, 15 years down the road, exposed to Agent Orange, what have you.
Right. And it's been a fight. I mean, we've had medical experts come in and testify. I mean, it's an established fact. This isn't, you know, fantasy land that we're talking about people getting these mysterious illnesses and, you know, trying to blame it on that. No, it's a real fact. I mean, there's medical evidence to support that now. So, again, it's just a common sense approach to help those that responded in the time that our country was, you know, really hurt.
Tell me about, I know Flio recently wrote a letter about the Bulletproof Vest Partnership Grant Program.
Sure. So, you know, not every law enforcement agency is able to afford, you know, bulletproof a vest. I mean, as crazy as that
really
sounds, and, you know, some of them are big departments, and this is a grant that, you know, gives the protection that really every single law enforcement officer in this country should afford to have.
That's as crazy as the White House not having an automatic lock on the front door. They got to turn it like I turn my lock at home.
That's right, click. That's right, exactly. So all we're doing is we're just supporting that. And, you know, they are expensive. I mean, they aren't cheap. It's a very expensive piece of equipment. But I think we can all agree that this is a very essential and necessary piece of equipment. You know, unfortunately, we live in a dangerous time. And And the threats on law enforcement continue. They're increasing. And we have to find ways to protect our law enforcement folks.
You're right. And they are expensive because the task has always been to design these, you know, not only in a way to provide maximum protection, but to allow you to do those primary and rigorous, you know, engage in those primary rigorous law enforcement.
Jumping over fences, running after the bad guys in fast pursuit.
And not feel restricted by having them.
Right.
So what do you think is going to be in store with the new Congress in terms of law enforcement pay and benefits and agency benefits? It seems, you know, every year it's open season on federal employees.
Seems that way.
And the famous punching bag, the whipping boy out there and law enforcement seems to take it right along with them.
Well, we're concerned that, you know, as new agents come on, they're going to have to contribute greater to their pension plan. Right now, there's already three versions of FERS out there, and we're concerned that there's probably going to be a fourth or maybe even a fifth version where there'll be a greater contribution. We're concerned that there might be an attack on for law enforcement firefighters. We have a special OPM supplement that kind of, since we have to retire early, we can't collect Social Security, so this little supplement kind of bridges the gap from our retirement to Social Security, and we're concerned that that might be taken away. We're concerned that there may be a recalculation of how they determine our high three. They may turn it to a high five, and though I don't believe that's going to cost the government or it's going to save them all that much, to go from a three to a five, we're thinking that perhaps they'll just leave that one alone. But we do see a continuing attack on our benefits. I mean, there's reason for it. I mean, but you know, we think we're special. You know, I'm sorry. That's how we feel. So I think we're going to see some attacks on the benefit front. We will continue to address those. We keep seeing where there's bills or amendments out there that want to disarm law enforcement or take their firearms away, and we're addressing those. And so it's kind of some crazy things that pop up, and we're scratching our heads thinking, why is this going on now? So we'll keep addressing those as we monitor Congress very closely.
Yeah, and I always thought, you know, one of the issues was the pay cap. With the overtime premium y'all get, it almost discourages anybody from becoming a supervisor. We're running out of time here. I do want to mention that both you guys, the National Memorial and FLIOA, in April will be out in Oklahoma, at Oklahoma City, bombing, honoring the eight fallen heroes from the on April 19th. You guys will be there together. So that's all the time we have.
Awesome.
I thank both of you for joining us. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend, everybody, and happy birthday, Mia.